and I ruined it by speaking in English. I was supposed to start like this. All right, here we go. Start over. Rewind that tape. Yeshu, I wo, wo shi tao. In yo san ching gao chua. Fan shao ha zi, zu mu yang. Wo sui rang ro, zu gan chang. Yeshu, I wo. Zhu. Yeshu, I wo. Zhu, yeshu, I wo. Yo shen ching. And got you. All right? Totally? First of all, I can feel my parents groaning in shame and agony as I just butchered Cantonese. I know some of you are fluent in Cantonese and Mandarin. Some of you are studying it. And yeah, that Asian guy up front has no idea how to use that accent or pronounce those words correctly. Do you understand all that? Anyone have a guess as to what that highly theological statement was? I will show you. Let's play it again.
Hello, 小朋友，我们今天要来唱《耶稣爱我，我知道》。
Dead certain I sounded just like that. My accent was on point. Speaking of languages, if this is if you're new to Pathways, we're a diverse church. We're a multicultural church. And so we sometimes worship in different languages. We have different cultures. We have different ethnicities, and we just have variety among us. And so we also have Gen Z. And so if you are, can I go back to that other slide, Kath? There's a Gen Z slang. There's an online terminology I want to teach you. If you know, you know. And when I read that online, it just makes me feel old because I have no idea. When I'm looking at that thing online, I was like, I have no idea what I should know, but I don't know because I'm supposed to be an expert in teenager. And can someone explain to me a series of memes? Like, I get one of them, but when you put them together, they make a totally different message, and I have no idea what it is. And when I ask the students to explain it, they just kind of laugh and say, and they purposely don't explain it to me. Because it's either something they don't want me to know or I'm just too old. When you see things like that, when you hear someone speaking in a different language, it's not unlike walking into the office here on any given day and hearing Pastor Eddie and Ananda and Carol and Frank and Sylvia all chattering away in Portuguese and totally leaving the rest of us out and not at all trying to include us, and they're probably talking about us, and it just makes you feel like you don't belong. And so I made a resolution. I am going to learn Portuguese. But I'm going to do it by just listening a lot to Portuguese. I'm just going to listen to a lot. I'm going to figure out like what the current style is in Brazil, and I'm just going to dress like that. I'm going to support all of their teams, and that will really help me be fluent in Portuguese. This is kind of how we do it in America. Right? When you're in school, you take a class maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, maybe half an hour at a time. And these teachers expect you to be able to be at some point later on, after years of this, to be somewhat able to be fluent in language. And for those of you who do speak multiple languages, you know that that's just about maybe the worst way to learn a language. Certainly, immersing yourself in the culture helps, but there's only really one way to learn the language. You got to put the work in. You got to do the work. Will I ever actually become fluent in any language but my own if I don't do the work? Probably not. And so today is about an encouragement to help you learn a different language. So let's play a little game. I originally thought that we were going to have like five people up here and five people up here, and we'd play a little family feud, but we don't have time for that. So let's just all play at the same time. Ready? Let's try this. I sprung this on the tech team this morning, so it may not be perfectly smooth, but that's on me. So let's play a little game. Oh, no, cover the answers, cover the answers. Clear all, clear all. Don't look, don't look. Everyone close your eyes. Let's try it again, and then there's a little button that says clear all. Go ahead and put it up there. All right. Hey, clear all, clear all. Don't look, don't look. Clear all, clear all. While they're trying to get that up and running, we'll start playing. All right, so top 10 reasons why you might learn a new language. This is your turn. Yell it out. I'll repeat it back so they can hear it on mic. Top 10 reasons on a survey as to why you might learn a new language. What are the benefits of learning a new language? Resume is number 10. It does provide better career choices. That is correct. It's not on there because it's number 10. What else? What are the top 10 reasons why you might, this is really working great. Why, what are the benefits of learning a new language? Yell it out. Your girlfriend speaks it is an excellent reason. That's probably number 12. It's not on there. This is really going great. Okay, keep going. The top 10 reasons. Ordering food is definitely my number one, but Kath, is it actually on there? Oh, so sad. Strike. We'll call that our first strike. Go ahead and hit it again to clear it. Hit that same one to clear it. Wait, wait, what? What? Visiting the country. You would think that would be number one. Is it on there, Kath? Oh, so sorry. We have one more left. Top 10. We haven't hit any of the top eight yet. Top, they really do exist. Top 10 reasons. Sharpens your mind. Is that on there? Someone save us. Hey, that's the number four reason. Well, let's get one more. Anyone got one more guess? It keeps your coworkers from talking about you. It's not on there, says Paula. I can't even read that one. It's number five. We got number five. That's good. Go ahead and reveal them all, Kath. Oh, to tell someone about Jesus should absolutely be number one. It's not on the list. It boosts your brain power. It improves your memory. It enhances your ability to multitask. Learning a different language sharpens your mind. Learning a different language, I can't read that one because my eyesight is real bad. It keeps the mind sharper for longer. It enhances your decision-making. Learning a second language improves your first language skills. It improves your performance in other academic areas. It increases your networking skills, and it provides better career choices. You know what's weird about the survey? About all the benefits of learning a different language? It has nothing to do with the actual language that you're learning. These are all internal and external benefits to your everyday life. And that's not even including the reasons, the benefits that you would have from being fluent, being exposed to a different culture, being exposed to diversity, to a whole new way of thinking and speaking and feeling and everything else. Learning how to have a relationship with God has often been made analogous to learning a new language. Learning how to have a relationship with God is often compared to learning a new language. But what if, like a new language, what if you don't speak it regularly? What if you've forgotten most of the vocabulary? Are you still fluent in it? What if we have dropped this language of fluency with God, if we can't be fluent with him, then maybe we lose the ability to see him in our everyday, because we're not practicing it every day. And if we lose the ability to see God in our life in real and tangible ways every day, well, then we've forgotten how to be thankful. And what if, because we've forgotten how to be present with him every day, we've forgotten how to be thankful with him, then it's probable that we're not living lives in a way that prepares our friends to be fluent with him eventually. What is the cost of having lost our thankfulness? What's the cost of having lost our everyday fluency with Jesus? We're in the middle of this series that we're calling, in other words, or subtitled, The Hard Sayings of Jesus. And today's passage is one that makes it seem like, when you read it straight up, it sounds like Jesus is playing favorites. It sounds like Jesus is saying he doesn't want everyone to speak the language. It sounds like Jesus is saying this is a secret thing just for you and not for them. And it's a tough thing to reconcile. That doesn't really make sense. All right, so we are in the Gospel of Mark today. And it reads like this. Jesus told them, "The secret of the kingdom has been given to you," he tells the disciples. "The secret of the kingdom of God has been given to you." And I imagine he's got them all huddled up, like they're in a football huddle and he's just kind of whispering to them, like he's the quarterback. "The secret has been given to you guys. But to those on the outside, everything is said in parables so that they may be ever seeing but never perceiving, and ever hearing but never understanding. Otherwise, they might turn and be forgiven." And I imagine in my head, because this is the way Jesus is, he's like, "Ready, guys? Break," and they all break up. This is a weird saying. It sounds really unfriendly. And yet, this passage is quoted in every single gospel, all four of them. That's unusual. Luke even records it twice. That's unusual. Paul gets in on the action and he cites this passage. It's listed no less than 5 times in the New Testament alone, and the source passage is in Isaiah. This quote, this citation is in the Bible 6 times. Let's go back to the source. Let's go back to Isaiah. This is God telling the prophet Isaiah he's about to send his prophet on a mission. And this is what God says to his prophet about the people he's trying to reach. God says to Isaiah, "Go and tell this people, be ever hearing but never understanding, be ever seeing but never perceiving. Make the heart of this people calloused, make their ears dull and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts, and they might turn and be healed. If you have a bone to pick with God, if you have a fight, and you're looking for a reason why God is playing favorites and why you don't want to follow a God that plays, like, on the surface, you might find these passages and say, see, I knew Christians were like this. I knew such hate existed among. Your God is not a love God. How can a God of love say this? I mean, I grew up in the church and youth groups. I've read this passage maybe 100 times and I never blinked. It never struck me weird. It never struck me wrong. Because those of us like that, we understand that there's more about Jesus. We understand that there's more to Scripture. The entire context of Scripture, the entire counsel of God, the entire Bible has a lot of passages about how God is absolutely desiring everyone to be in relationship with Him. There's just a handful of those verses listed there. All over the Old Testament and the New Testament, God reiterates that there is no qualification. He is looking for everyone and anyone. Well, then you might say, Pastor Jonathan, you've got a problem. You clearly have in the Bible some contradictory stuff, because it sure seems like God is saying, like Jesus is saying, like, no, don't tell them that. They might get it, so don't tell them. Don't speak it plainly, because they might actually repent. Hide it in a parable. Be secret about it. Hours of study I did this week. Many books, many commentaries. And the answer was in the very first book I looked in. There was a giant of a scholar named F.F. Bruce. And his conclusion was a deep dive into the Hebrew culture. For those of us who are from ethnic backgrounds, this makes sense. That as a minority group, the people of Jesus' day, the people of the Old Testament, felt oppressed. They felt pretty cynical about their future. They felt like they were always being attacked. They were pretty sour, they were pretty dour, they were pretty beaten down, and it affected everything about their culture, including the way they spoke. And so this scholar named F.F. Bruce puts forth this hypothesis that everyone seems to agree with, that Jesus was doing that thing where he listed the consequence as the purpose. What does that mean? He was sure, 99.9%, you're going to fall down. Don't do that, but you know what? Go ahead. Go ahead and do that and fall down. I'm not telling my child to fall down. I'm saying, I'm sure you're going to fall down. The consequence, you get the turn. I want you to do the opposite, but I know you're going to do it, so I'm going to be ironic and state it as a purpose. They all would have understood that. Everyone in Jesus' day would have understood that he was not trying to be secretive. Just like maybe in modern parlance today, we might hear this old friend say the same kind of thing.
We seem to be made to suffer. It's our lot in life.
We seem to be made to suffer. It's our lot in life. And that's not why C-3PO exists. That's not what his purpose was. That's not what his programming was. It's just the way he seemed that life always went. So that's my purpose. Was this really all that complicated, Jonathan? Did you really have to go through 15 minutes of this? No, it's pretty simple. This hard saying of Jesus doesn't mean what we think it means on the surface. But it does yield some other questions. Did Jesus mean to exclude some people? The answer is no. Quite the opposite. He wants to include everyone. But it raises the question then, so then who is on the inside and who is the outside that he was speaking of? And why are they on the outside and why are you on the inside? Well, that gets a little more complicated. Let's call it this. Let's say it this way. Outsiders see no revelation of the kingdom of God in Jesus. When you talk about Jesus and you hear no truth in him, When you hear about Jesus and you dismiss him for being irrelevant, when you look and hear about the things the church is and does, and you hear only the worst of humanity, then perhaps you might be on the outside. Insiders understand that everything about Jesus, his words, his actions, even the stuff that was done out in the clear, out in the open, everything he did and said and represented is in itself a parable. It makes no sense why he did what he did, what he said, what he said. Everything requires an interpreter. He was living his life in a completely different language. And it would seem, from these passages, the only qualification for being an insider was wanting to be. All you had to do was come with an innocent and a pure heart and say, "What? Who? How did you? What does that mean? Where are you going? What am I supposed to be doing? What do you mean to me in my life?" You don't have to have any of the answers. You don't have to have any of the knowledge. You don't have to have any of this perfected. All that's required to be on the inside is just that innocent hope that someday you might understand, that someday you are honest. "Seek and you will find me," he said. In youth groups, there's the first couple years of a new youth group are spent building the identity of that group. You brand them, you give them hoodies, you give them a name, you take them to camps, you create a vibe, you have some group games that you get used to playing, you have the same kind of food, you have some patterns, some routines, and eventually they start to have an identity as a group. And they start to like it, which is really cool. And then the outgoing kids, when they start to like it, they start to bring their friends. "Like, I've got these really cool people I want you to meet." And there's a moment that I greatly enjoy as a pastor, when there's a kid, and they were missing last week, but they came this week, and you pull her aside, and you say, "You know, you don't need your host anymore, right? You've come enough. We just want you to be here with us, even without your host. You can come, even if they're not here. You're us." And more than a couple times, that kid has broken down. They've just never heard that stated out loud. You're on the inside. You belong here. On your own merits, you are welcome here. One girl even kind of tearfully cried. She's like, she was crying, and after she was sniveling, and she's like, "Why?" I'm like, "Well, because you wanted to be us. So you are. Welcome." All that's required to be on the inside is you asking him and wanting to be on the inside. Jesus is offering you a chance today to start or renew your intimacy with him. Maybe your Jesus language fluency has gotten a little rusty. Maybe you've been repeating 101 over and over and over again, and it's boring to you, and you're ready for the next challenge. Maybe you've been studying and you're in, you know, academic class 5 and you are ready for the immersion trip overseas. And that's a big jump. Maybe you've turned your attention to other languages and you've forgotten. So the last question, is Jesus saying that there's an insider group and an outsider group? No. Is he saying that to be on the inside, all you need to do is ask? Yes. So then how do we stay on the inside? The student ministry, again, we've been working on the same theme for a couple of years, and it doesn't really make a catchy phrase, so we don't say it too much to the kids, but it's God in my everyday. God in my everyday. They get the big God concept. They get that there is a God. They get that there's a present reality and a future spiritual reality. They get all that. What they don't get is, how does God live in my life in a real and tangible way right now, today, here? I can feel it. I can touch it. I can notice that he changed something. That's the part they have problems with. It's really hard for students to see God have any effect upon their life here today. They get that maybe as an adult, maybe when they're about to die, maybe when they're really sick, or they haven't studied at all for the test, they haven't been to class at all, they haven't read the book at all, they haven't done any of the homework, and it's time for the final, and so they cry out to God, God, be real for me right now. And God does not answer in the way that they are hoping, and they shake their fist and say, see, God isn't real. Because otherwise he would have magically given me all that homework answers, and I... It's really hard for students who live here among the wealthiest 1% of the population of the world, just by virtue of being born here in America, just by virtue of being here in a suburb, just by having a house with a roof and a lock. It's hard for them, given their wealth, to see any difference in their life because of Jesus as compared to their Muslim friend, as compared to their atheist friend, as compared to any of their friends. What difference in their life is there because of Jesus? It's hard for them to see that. It's really hard for the students to see the church as any different because of Jesus as compared to any other service agency or justice agency. And you know this as well as I do, almost 100% of the time, in comparison, the church versus any of those agencies, we come out behind. It's really hard for students to see how Jesus makes a difference in their life. How about you? Does this struggle mean that they're on the outside? Does it mean that because they don't have fluency, that they're not part of Jesus' family? Does it mean that there isn't a welcome extended to them? Of course not. Don't be ridiculous, Jonathan. They're trying, so therefore it counts. And some of them aren't even trying, but they're, one kid put it, I'm trying to try. Like, I don't want it yet, but I want to maybe want it someday, so that's my prayer. It's like, that's a good prayer, kid. That's an honest prayer. I appreciate that. So what would God say about your intimacy with him? How have you been doing lately? Not in a guilty way. This is your loving father taking you out for a meal. You're having a good time laughing, and you come to that moment of seriousness where your father reaches over and says to you, so how are we doing? Are we okay? When's the last time we had some really intimate moments together? Was that yesterday? A week ago? 2-3 months ago, maybe? Not in any condemning way, just honestly, like, I want more of these. I want more of these times when we can be intimate and just you and me. And then he looks at you and says, so how do we do better at this? And you're like, well, I'll make an appointment for you next Tuesday, God. And he kind of looks at you. Well, Monday, is that better for you? Sunday, I'm with you every Sunday, Jesus. And your loving father looks at you and says, to learn this language, my child, this language of fluency, it's got to be every day. Every day, it takes practice. It's like learning a new language. So, Pastor Jonathan, why did you pick this passage for Thanksgiving Sunday? That's not very thankful. You kind of make me feel guilty. It's because of this. I think the key to finding intimacy and fluency with Jesus is thankfulness. I can't do it by my will. I'm not that strong. I'm a creature of my desire. You show me a food commercial and I want that food. You show me another commercial, I want that food. I just want what I want. If I am reminded of who he is in my life every day, then I want what I want, and that's to be thankful. I'll respond to God best and fastest and most eagerly when I'm grateful. It's like those marriage exercises in premarital counseling when they tell you, you know, at the end of every day, you should look at your spouse and have this honest conversation of, have I filled your love tank today? And honestly, did I do well at that? Did I not? What can I do tomorrow? How am I doing? And that's just, man, if you haven't been married, that's awkward, man. That's hard. Because that answer is not usually what I want to hear. Man, I want to go back to work tomorrow. All right, so it was that way when I was single, though, too. I remember saying this phrase in my head all the time, getting home after a very long day with students, after a very long weekend, after a very long week, whatever it was, coming home to my apartment by myself, and just in my soul saying, God, you saw all that, right? That was you and me. It's just you and me. There's no one else here. I'm pretty empty, God. I need you to fill my love tank. The more often I did that, the more often I do that with my wife, the more fluent I get in how to love her, how I love my God. The more time I reflect on who he is in my life and what he's done for me, I can go from the 40,000 foot to the 30,000 foot view of what he's done in my life. And from the 30,000 to the 10,000 foot. And from the 10,000 to the 100. And then maybe, hopefully someday, I will be as mature where I can see him right here, right now. I can see him today. This happened and I saw your hand there, God. I saw you change my life because of your presence in my life. This horrible thing happened to me, God, but I am fine because I see your hand in it. And it looks like it's about to bruise me and hurt me, but I see you here and I know it's for the better. God, I am hurting and I am grieving, but I'm not out because I know I can see you in my life right here, right now. The more I do that, the more I get, it's like the Matrix. So there's a whole overlay of what's going on in reality of God's presence, and I'm fluent in how to see him in my life. And the more I live in thankfulness, the more that exudes from me so that my friends who aren't yet following him are getting exposed to that same language. And I might be able to have conversations in that language with them. So, pathways. Here's your homework. The next time I'm preaching, I have the honor of closing the year. The last Sunday of the year is mine to preach, and it is the year in review. And so we are going to do this. I am going to challenge you. You have 5 weeks, like maybe six, something like that. There's a bunch of homework assignments. There's a bunch of helps and prompts in your YouVersion app or in your email. There are discussion prompts. I'm going to ask you, take some time between here and there and look at your whole year and look at your fluency and tell the stories of where he is in your life. We're going to have mics and the text team's going to have people running around and you got 60 seconds, 120 if it's really, really good. You're going to share your story, and no one here is going to judge you or compare it. We're taking everything that you say on face value. Tell your story of who God is in your life and how he has been present in your life, because we need to hear those stories. There are people among us who right now are just going through a brutal time. There are those among us who are hurting, who are grieving, who are in incredibly tense conflict. There are people who are in pain and there's just too much noise. They can't hear him. They can't see him. Maybe your story will get through. When you hold back your story from us, you hurt the body. And it's not just verbal. For those of you who aren't verbal, I imagine out there, like some of you have sketched something or sculpted something or painted something, and we put them out on easels, and this is how you are celebrating God's presence in your life this past year. Or some of you are you like to bake things. Well, then fill out that refreshment table with, like, I made this as my thank you to all of you and to God for who he is in my life. And that was the best brownie I've ever had. Maybe some of you are going to, you're going to serve. This is, we'll see new tech people back there. We'll see new camera people. We'll see new hosts at the desk. We'll hear stories of, I've joined this class. I joined this small group. I joined Jonathan's student ministry team. You found a way to move forward. I'm ready for my next step. We're going to do this at the end of the year in 5 weeks. Actually, you have 3 weeks because we have time to prepare it. If you want to video yourself saying it, then that's fine. You can just rehearse it. We'll help you. I'll spend all Sunday afternoon with you shooting you and, like, you want to do it again? Like, okay, we'll do it again. Like, but we have to hear these stories. Think about it this way. If we can't answer the students to their challenge, does Jesus make a difference? Prove it. Prove it that God is real. Prove it that Jesus has made a difference in your life. Prove it that you love him and that he loves you. Because if my life, says a student, if it looks just like my non-Christian friend's life, then what's the point? So we have an obligation to each other, to ourselves, to everyone hurting, to the next generation, to the generation before, to tell these stories, to regain our fluency, not only you yourself, but we as a congregation, to tell our stories. Following Jesus is a lot like learning a new language. And you're never done with a language. There's always more vocabulary. There's always more ways to say things. There's always weird Gen Z slang online that you got to learn. Jesus is always something new for us, something new for you. You are welcome and invited to be an insider in his presence just by asking him, God, be real in my life today. Show me who you really are. Show me what you're doing. I want to see that, and I want to be thankful. And all the people of God said,